This session is positive self-awareness. And positive self-awareness to me is the moment of truth, is where it all begins, where it starts. Positive self-awareness is the awareness that you and I have been distorted. We have been holding ourselves in. We listen to our parents, to our teachers. We listened to the news media. We read the papers. And we thought somehow that it wasn't worth it. What we really meant is I'm not worth it because the abundance is shrinking for me. But positive self-awareness is a seminar, a walk along the Swan River, a trip to the snowy mountains where you step back from the canvas of your life and you say, I've been selling it short, haven't I? You bet. Across the board, environmentally, physically, and mentally, you've been selling the whole ball game short. Positive self-awareness, to me, breaks up into three areas. One, distortion. Two, uniqueness. And three, the idea that past thoughts equal present performance, and therefore present thoughts equal future performance. If I'm aware of anything, I'm aware of these three ideas: that I've been distorted in the negative, I'm uniquely different from anyone, the things that I have thought all my life equal the way I presently perform, and the thoughts that I think today will equal my future performance. In other words, you are today a preview of coming attractions. The reason I know this is that I watched a woman, 35, during neurosurgery. During brain surgery, they keep the patient awake. They stuck an electrode probe down in her brain to check her motor activities. They touched her Betamax, her neuron cells, and she fired her fifth birthday. Now, consider what's stored there, everything that's ever been vividly, emotionally, and repetitively thought is stored as if it were there again. And you might understand that your brain is a hologram, the most magnificent biocomputer, that if you stored all the IBM computers in tandem in the Empire State Building, you wouldn't have a fraction of the memory potential of an 8-year-old. And this woman, before my eyes, relived her fifth birthday party, but she was 35. She was not hypnotized, nor regressed. She refired, as if the Betamax was an instant replay. Saliva came down the side of her mouth. She got a Dutch doll with wooden shoes. She ate strawberry angel food cake, and she knew that we were all the little children with party hats with her. She refired and relived. They touched another place in her brain. She smelled a rose. They touched it again. She smelled it again. That's called the olfactory glands beginning to function again. How could you re-smell? How can you re-salivate? How can you remember by reliving? That's the brain. It must recall the pathway that has been set. That's looking back. Well, then what do you do when you look ahead? When you look ahead, the same thing happens. If you're able, which you and I do naturally, not even knowing why, if you're able to synthetically live today, an Oscar-winning Academy Award or future performance, vividly, emotionally, pictorially, verbally, and viscerally, then you create a pathway electrochemically in your brain that you must follow. You cannot move away from that thought. So your positive self-awareness tells you, if your past thoughts etch in you your present performance, and that they're all etched from the beginning, what would you do to your future? Well, you would live it now synthetically. And as only the human being has a success instinct, animals have a procreation survival instinct, but human beings have a creative success instinct that is trying to improve itself. So that if you were to use that instinct and synthetically live it now, you'd create a preview of an Oscar winning rather than a neurotic coming attraction. If you forecast your pleasures, your desires, your creative imagination, you'd forecast your weather as clear. If you forecast the problems that you foresaw in the past, and the problems that you see today, you'll be a living example of them. You must follow the pathway. That's the idea of distortion, uniqueness, and one way to put it across is, I'd like to show you a slide or two. And the slide or two, the first one, shows you your distortion. You look at that, you've seen it in every psychology book perhaps before. It's a perception. I call it a Lolo. When you look at that, what do you see? Anybody? See old woman? Beautiful woman? You see a young beautiful woman? How many see a young beautiful woman? Absolutely. How many see what I see? An old hag. That's better. Whew, boy. I was worried for a minute. Oh, boy. I look at that and there's no question. No question at all. That is an old hag. She's an old hag with a great big hook nose. She's got one eye looking down. She's got a lip with no teeth, of course. And she's got this big chin drooping down on her old fur coat. Big drooping chin, no teeth, big hook nose. Bump on her nose, eye looking down, the old hag. Of course, on the other hand, if you saw the young girl, you came up her plunging neckline and saw a white silk choker around her neck. You saw her high jawbone here, her chin, high cheekbone coming up, a profile looking to the left with a little button nose, eyelash, and an ear. So you saw her face as the upper part. You saw the high cheekbone, the chin, the high jawbone, the ear, the little button nose, the eyelash, the neck, the white silk choker, the bouffant hairstyle, a Toulouse-Lautrec beautiful young model looking to the left on the upper part, or the old hag, the straight-on total face. I was in Auckland, New Zealand, and the guy in the back said, "I see it, mate." And I said, "What do you see?" And he said, "The moose going up the snowbank." I said, "I'd like to see you for about a half an hour after the program." He said, "You said it doesn't make any difference what happens, it's how you take it." He said, "I don't see the old hag or the young woman, I see that moose." Well, you see anything you want. That's called Lolo. I do it with my children every day. They say, "Dad, look at the young woman." I said, "It's an old hag. Let's be reasonable, do it my way. My mind's made up. Don't confuse me with facts. As usual, father knows best." And they said, "He always does that." Somebody show me 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 a month. I said, "Don't confuse me with that. I'm a $1,000 a month person if I ever saw one." I lock onto my first perception and I lock out yours, but I can't help it. It's the way I look at things. Now, the next one that I see, you've seen this. I've won a drink in every pub, in every bar, in every country I've gone to with that sentence. I carry it in my pocket. It's called the F card. And what you do is you count, you read the sentence to yourself, you don't share it with your neighbor. You read each word, and you count the number of F's that you see in the sentence. It's not an optical illusion. Count the number of F's that you see. There are very few. Be honest with me. How many actually do get the three? How many get all four? How many get five? How many get all six? Well, you're better than most. Of course, those little devils in there, those scotomas, are called ofs. There's no question. You think this is off? It's not off. It's of. And that's of. And that's of, and the finished and files and scientific are okay, but the ofs are spelled O-V. Some of them, or all of them, or most of them. You've been trained since you've been a child that I pledge allegiance to the flag of, or of the I sing, or of, and your teachers have done it well. You never see what is, you see what you've heard, you see what you've learned. You have a reticular activation system in the back of your brain. Whatever you see through your eyes goes back and gets differentiated in the computer. If you see something that's different from the way you've learned it, it drops out of your eyesight. Not all of it, but most of it or some of it. If I put up on the board, once upon a time, the second A would drop from your eyesight. 99% would see once upon a time. If I put Paris into the spring, you'd see Paris in the spring. That's the way you've been taught. You never see what is, you see what you've been trained in your experience. There's your self-awareness. I took 600 children about age 6. I flashed up the F card. Was going to have a game with them. I said, how many you get, kids? They all went 6. So what, Doc? I said, you wait till you grow up. You get 6 now, you'll get 5, 4, 3 later on. We'll get you going. You may think you're smart now. Those are called scotomas. A scotoma is a perceptual educated block. Lolo is a lock on, lock out. Now, I am distorted, I must admit, and I'm unique. The next slide depicts the three arenas in which you operate, and so do I, the three-ring circus. The environmental world, we've talked about that. We've talked about the environment as being more abundant than you and I could get in 1,000 lifetimes. Your environment at work, your environment with your family, your environment of leisure time, your environment of education. The environments are outside of you. If this is a three-ring circus, then the ring inside is the physical. The ring in the center is the bullseye, the mental. The environment, the physical, and the mental, the three arenas of our life. And inside the mental is a mental spiritual or a metaphysical, a spiritual drawing upon that gives us our mental outlook to control our body, to hit the environment, which is hitting us. I'll assert to you in your positive self-awareness that you and I have been selling it a short across the board. When's the last time you watched the koala climb the gum tree? When have you been to the barrier reef? How's your second home? Do you listen to cassettes in the car? Do you read a book digest every week? How is your environment? Spend time with your children, of course, every night. How's the environmental world? It's abundant. We couldn't get it in 1,000 lifetimes. Don't sell it short. I used to try to change jobs, change territories, thought about changing wives, changing children, changing houses, changing cars, changing my environment. Why? I was dissatisfied. But life is inside out. You never get it by going outside in. You've got to move inside the circle. So I did. I moved inside the circle to my physical ring, and I saw that I'd been selling my body short, in my case, selling it long. There's more abundance in my body than I could use in 1,000 lifetimes. How's your body these days? Your physical world. Do you puff when you walk upstairs? Can you run a 12 flat 100 meters? How's your tennis game, your golf game? What do you put in your body? Well, I mean, I put a bean burrito in my tank. I can't afford high test. I got an old clunker. I have a 33 Hudson Terrapin, and they don't make them anymore. When we eat lunch, I'll eat a salad, and you'll say, well, that's better. But up in my room, I've got banana moon pies, Dorito chips, M&Ms, and Twinkies, and those are our junk food. You see, my body is the same as the environment. It's a polluted situation, and you can't do much with it. If it gets a dead battery, I'll get a pacemaker. If I get a clogged carburetor, I'll get a coronary bypass. Heck, it's just an old clunker to get me from birth to death with the least number of overhauls wrong. Your body is a Rolls. It's an Apollo spacecraft. It's meant to fly the environment. It is meant to win. If it gets cold, it shivers, desperately trying to get warm. If it gets hot, it sweats to cool the skin temperature down. You don't sweat because you work. You sweat because your body says time to cool off. That's what it does for you automatically. I got some self-awareness with my body, and you may think it's rather droll and mundane and stupid, but I call it self-awareness. I went into my bedroom and locked the door, I thought. I listened for footsteps. I took off all my clothes in positive self-awareness. And before I dared look at me the way I really am, I stuffed a paper bag over my head with eye holes cut out. You know what that does? It takes away old friend. It makes you objective. When I look in the mirror in the morning once in a while, I see my dark circles, my loose jowls. I see the problems from my life, but I rationalize it because of my superior personality. And I say, hey, how you doing? And I say, fine. You're not looking too good. And say, so what? You're 47. And then I cop out on it. I stuff a paper bag over my head and take my clothes off, and the deal is different. I stand there and look, and I don't see old friend. I see the stranger with a sack over his head. In my case, I saw the Incredible Hulk. I gave myself a side view, and I said, I gave myself a rear view, and I said, gee, those two pigs trying to get out of there. I said, I don't know who you are, but get dressed and get out. And just then my wife walked in. My wife saw me struggling, tweaking and tuning with a sack over my head, nude. She thinks I'm a little on my way anyway. Southern California, behavioral psychologist, absolutely in fashion. She said, what is it, a cult movement? Is that what it is? But it was October, and in our country we have a holiday in October that you can get away with wearing a paper bag over your head when you're nude. So I hit her with it. I thought I might be able to escape. I said, trick or treat, dear, what do you think? And she said, I don't see any treat, I'll take the trick. She said, if you're going to expose yourself like this, why not put the bag over without eye holes cut? You'll like what you see. I bought my bathing suit, below the knees up to the armpits, and I went down to the beach, but first in the car, in the parking lot, I inhaled. And I exhaled in the water, which was 1,500 yards away, which meant I nearly asphyxiated myself before I got to the water. I stepped in, and I noticed a scuba diving class. I quickly stepped out because I didn't want them to spear me or ride me. The great white whale, the clunker, the old polluted environmental body, the physical. Now, you can't do good if you don't feel good. I pickle mine a lot. Well, maybe it'll last longer. I put it in alcohol. I thought it would. I barbecue mine a lot. I'm so white, I like to get brown. I know people who'd like to get light. I don't know what to do. But my body is a Ferrari, a Rolls, an Apollo spacecraft. It's meant to win. You know what you and I do now? We exercise 12 minutes a day with aerobic exercises. We get our heart rate up to 80% of its maximum rate for our age. In 12 minutes each day, we burn off the fat. That way, we don't have to lose weight. Because when you diet, you lose muscle as well as fat. And if you keep dieting, you'll always lose muscle along with the fat. But if you burn it off by walking, jogging, handball, racquetball, something, you'll burn off 1 pound a month, 12 pounds a year. You'll never gain weight, regardless of what you eat. Which is to say that you and I eat 20 pounds of food less per year than we did 10 years ago, yet we weigh 10 pounds, or how many stone, more because of our sedentary society. So you and I exercise at least 12 minutes a day and take care of the pump and get the body going. We get a physical every 2 years. We get the complete checkup, and we put in high test in our body, and it's a winner. But we do that. But then we go to the center of the circle, and we get our mental awareness perking. We realize that problems are normal, that there's more abundance than we could get in 1,000 years, and we go for it. Problems are normal, a crisis is opportunity, and there's more abundance than you could get in 1,000 years. There's positive self-awareness. Here's the point. In the body, interferon has been now synthesized from bacteria. So interferon interferes with virus disease, and in less than 10 years, you and I will not have to worry about the infectious diseases that are the scourge of our life. We won't be able to catch anything from the outside. So it'll only be inside out. The energy crisis will give way to battery-powered cars for the short run and liquid hydrogen vehicles for the long run. So by the year 2020, liquid hydrogen vehicles will power our freeways, the exhaust from which is cleaner than the air on the snowy mountains or Blue Mountain. Here's what I mean. Liquid hydrogen automobiles have exhausted its oxygen. They powered our spacecraft to the moon. When you burn water, you get clear oxygen in a hydrogen engine. It'll suck the smog back out of every city. Our children will say, you mean you used to drive those things with dinosaur junk in them? We say, sure, a V8 too. Things were tough back then. And they say, boy, I must have been. I can't imagine anyone driving that thing. And I said, well, we did and we love them. Interferon, fiber optics, liquid hydrogen, laser fusion, enough coal here in West Australia, 500 years worth of petroleum. We have the energy crisis opportunity. The Chinese are right. They're smart. They've been around a long time. They take the word crisis and they invent it by putting two symbols together in their own language, danger and opportunity. They know what it is. They know that every crisis is a dangerous opportunity, that problems are normal. So let's take our awareness, blow the lid off your bottle, blow the lid off your oil well, and consider that the 1980s are wide open environmentally, physically, and the only limits are self-imposed because the brain, everything we've invented is an ox cart. A Betamax is nothing. A Polaroid one step, you got it here. You got the Xerox, you got it all. All we need to do is eliminate the fear, the laziness, and the hesitation based on negative inputs and go to work.
Please fast forward the tape to the end and turn over for side two.
Now let's get this moving. If trait number one is positive self-awareness, what should I be most aware of? You should be aware of trait number two. So trait number two is positive self-esteem. And positive self-esteem, to me, is the single most important quality that we'll talk about. Positive self-esteem, according to a Harvard study recently, if you're going to be aware of anything, be aware of this one. Point number two, positive self-esteem is the single most important human quality in a salesman, in a manager, in a leader, in a mother, in a father, in a child growing up. It is a feeling that I accept myself as a changing, imperfect, growing human being. It is a feeling that I am deserving of the abundance that I saw in my awareness, which has been opened up. It is a feeling that I pay value to myself coming in and that I accept value paid by others going out. It is accomplished by self-talk. You talk to yourself at 800 words a minute, every minute of every day. You talk to yourself in words, pictures, and emotions. You express those emotions by the way you talk, by the way you tell people how you are. If you're a salesman, make certain that you never come in leading with your chin, making an excuse, or holding back or talking down. People buy it in the first 3 minutes of confrontation. They don't buy the product, they buy the person representing it. If you're good, then you must have a good company. they buy the individual respect because they like to feel that the person representing it is for real. That's called self-esteem. It's not pride. Pride is in what you've got and what you've done and what you had. Self-esteem is what you're going to do and what you feel you deserve. Here's why it's so important. You and I raise our children, and we were raised correct to perfect. We're raised to be humble. We're raised to feel, to be felt selfless. And it's a good trait to be humble, but humiliation is a tightrope on the other side. I raised my 6 children wrong, at least the first few. I tried to make them winners by competition. And I said to my children, big boys don't cry. Don't you get angry with me. I'll give you something to cry about. Don't touch yourself, especially there. That's nuclear radiation in the bathtub. Now, don't you touch that area. You'll go blind when you're 18. Is that why you're having trouble seeing now, Dad? Don't you be insubordinate. I don't want you interrupting me. That's not the way to draw a cow. Cows aren't purple, and they have bags hanging under them. That's a horse. Put the chimney on top of the house and stay inside the lines. It'll look better. My son's 3rd birthday party. Can you imagine a kid in his own house taking a big hunk out of the center of the cake with an ice cream ball and eating it while the other kids, who he invited, sit there with an empty plate? I said, you little pig, put that big piece back. It's polite to take the smaller piece. Serve your guests first. He was just trying to be king for a day. Just be special, but I wouldn't let him, not me. I'm the king. My daughters crawled all over me, but I was watching Walter Cronkite. So I said after dinner, which rejected their affection for the moment. They had a country store built in the garage, but I was watching Monday Night Football, and it was a good game, and I said after the game, and they had to go to bed. So they broke it down, and somehow I never quite saw some of the great kingdoms that they had built. When they were good, my wife and I went, shh. We tiptoed out. When they were bad, I was right on the spot. Don't do that again. That's what I don't want you to do. They got the idea that to get Dad, you messed up. When they brought their papers home, there were 78 right and 22 wrong. What, do you got the measles on your paper or something? Get 100, and I'll put it on the refrigerator with a butterfly magnet. They could hardly wait to grow up. And that's why today children constantly want to be adults where the action is. Somehow they get in the way. They're sent to Disney World. They're sent to the parks. They watch television. They're indulged. But are they loved enough? I don't think so. And I think as we begin to get pressured to earn husband and wife with the inflation, we tend to forget that the most precious times of the day are those times when they are receptive. And the only time children are receptive is before they sleep, because they're always awake and moving the rest of the time. They need somebody to come in and tell them a story about themselves. The way it goes with me is this. Take a moment to hear today what your children are trying to say. Listen today, whatever you do, or they won't come back to listen to you. Listen to their problems. Listen to their needs. Praise their smallest triumphs. Praise their smallest deeds. Listen to their chatter. Amplify their laughter. Find out what's the matter. Get to what they're after. Tell them that you love them every single night. And as you tiptoe out, brush your teeth, happy dreams, sleep tight, turn out the light, turn around and say, oh, by the way, regardless of our differences today, tomorrow, everything's going to be all right. And things between you and I are bright. Take a moment to hear today what the children try to say. Listen today, whatever you do, and they'll come back to listen to you. My dad told me I was special, but I heard some other things. And I told my children some other things. And now I'm a grown-up kid, and so are you, with a prickly weed that wants to be humble and not indulged. Here's what I watch. I see people, salesmen, managers, mothers, fathers, top people, holding back, not wanting to feel special, not wanting the loneliness that comes with distancing when you're a winner. Afraid to win, not afraid to lose. Afraid to win because it's heavy, because you have to set an example in your own life. And yet the joy of having a good life is that you can give away the best. It isn't against religion. It is okay to build the best you so that it can be shared. And that's what self-esteem is all about. And that's why it's important to tell a child, you're about the most special human being I've ever met. I'm proud to wear your name. You've got the abundance. You'll go far. Even when they don't deserve it from their actions, their potential does. Now, I've been studying people who get what they want by giving people what they need. I've been studying skyjackers. They have no self-esteem. I've been studying assassins. They have none. You see, the people that shout for attention are calling for help. So anyone with a big brash, if you hear the loudmouth, you can be sure it's a tip-off. They don't feel good about themselves. They have to yell for service. And then there are the people who hesitatingly, desperately, try to do good for everyone in the world. Why? They need the attention. They've got to get the approval. They don't have time to build a good life, so they give away the worst of themselves all the time. But not you and I. You and I are modest because only people with high self-esteem can afford the pleasure of being modest. We know who we are. We don't shout it. And when we come in a room, we don't do what the losers do. The losers lead with their chin by not being able to pay value to themselves, and they cannot accept value paid. So the tip-off, if you want to hire somebody, when they come in with their resume, all you have to do to hire a winner is start throwing compliments quickly and start pointing out things in their resume that need either defense or qualification, and they'll tell you who they are quickly. A young woman came and sat in my program. I said, "Hi. You alone?" She said, "No, I'm divorced." I said, "Oh, how long have you been like that?" She said, "2 years now." I said, "It's a long court case, isn't it?" She said, "No, it's a status." I said, "No, it's an event. Target correction made. You're single again or unmarried, but you're not divorced the rest of your life." She said, "I thought you had to carry your stigmatisms with you." I said, "No, failures are corrections. They're not failings of life." The man came in drinking Perrier water. I said, "Do you like that stuff?" He said, "Not really, I'm an alcoholic." I said, "Oh, I'll be darned." I took off my shoe and showed him my ingrown toenail. He said, "Good Lord, man." I said, "Let's get it all on the table. What else is wrong?" He said, "No, I'm showing you where I'm coming from." I said, "Now I want to know where you're going." He said, "Oh." She had beautiful hair, so I told her about it. I said, "Gee, you have beautiful hair." And she said, "I have split ends, need to go to the beauty parlor." I said, "Oh, maybe it's because you got dark roots." She said, "I just wanted to mention the split ends right now." My dad came over for a glass of scotch. I said, "Hi, Dad. Little Chivas Regal?" He said, "Don't waste your good scotch on me, son." I said, "Oh, I forgot it was you. Here's some McGregor Rotgut for you." He said, "No, I meant don't go any trouble." I said, "Trouble? Gee, you made me. You're number one. I'll go to trouble for you anytime I want." He said, "Yeah, you know what I meant." I said, "I know. Is that a new suit?" "No, no, I was going to give it to Goodwill, actually." "Yeah, you probably should." "Gee, I love the way you play golf." "Oh, I closed my eyes and swung. Got lucky. Yeah, I knew it. I sure appreciate what you did for me. It was nothing. I thought so." "Boy, I like the way you do that. Don't mention it." "Okay, I won't." I'll tell you, it's devastating. You don't think it is? 800 words a minute you talk to yourself. You have a little robot inside, R2-D2 from Star Wars. Continuous loop self-image cassette. Recording all the time. Recording self-talk. Autonomic response. Children, grown-ups need to do it. I was on an airplane and I got caught. I get caught about once a week because my self-esteem is always at large because I don't know how people are taking me. We got a slow start today. I got to get this program moving. A lot of people yawning. We got to get it going now. Here's what we got to do. I was on an airplane. I had just bought a $500 ultra suede three-piece blue suit. I was a sucker for an optimist for the day. They told me that suit would leap to life on my body. That it was a $1 million suit, that I look fantastic in it. I couldn't let it die there on the shelf. I put it on my body. I got on an airplane, and the stewardess said, as she touched it, which made me embarrassed, she said, "Wow, Ultra suede, fantastic. And I said, want to polish your car? She said, what? I said, it's a chamois. It's actually something I polish my car with, wash it out, drip dry it on my body. She said, boy, you're weird, all right. I said, no, I just didn't want you to think it was anything special. She said, how come you're riding first class? I said, well, somebody else is paying for it. She said, thought so. They said, how much do you charge to speak, Dennis? I used to say, how much you got? They said, not much, our budget's small. And I said, don't worry, I can fit into any budget. They said, too bad, we wanted somebody better than that. I said, oh yeah. My wife and I hit it home. Now, think about the salespeople and think about yourself. Think about the award ceremonies. Think about your pay. Think about your successes. And think about coming in every day to the people you meet when you're qualifying yourself as a salesperson or as a human being. My wife and I had our anniversary May 5th, Atlanta, Georgia, Midnight Sun Restaurant. Waterfall candlelight violins. We were dressed to kill for each other. It was our big night. But she was looking at the waiter, which made me upset because I used to look at waitresses and she was a turnabout as fair play. I looked at the waiter. Admittedly, he looked like Omar Sharif on the half shell. He was 28, flashing black eyes and black hair, tuxedo, tremendous build, white flashing teeth. Well, he looked great, but I pointed out the space between his teeth. She said, yeah, just like Omar Sharif. Wow. I said, well, he's a good-looking guy, and he's got it going for him. He's a medical student working his way through college. The guy's got a job. He looks great. He talks great. He smiles great. He's a winner. I said, admittedly, he came up and gave me his self-esteem. I said, we'll have that steak Diane flambé. Flame it up, roll it out, serve it in. The big ticket, anniversary. Go ahead, do it to us. And he said, he says, my first week on the job, I've never done anything like that before, and I probably splattered grease on your wife's dress, maybe even set it on fire. Why don't you order roast beef? I said, what? You're going to play the anniversary waltz for us? He said, no, I've never done anything like that before. I probably screw it up, sir, and besides, you don't want it. I said, well, wait a minute now. You'll never see us again. We wouldn't have noticed had you not mentioned. We came for the music. You'll have to do it to somebody sooner or later. Why not experiment on good people having fun? And he said, the stewardess was right. You're weird. He struggled, and he prepared it, which you and I do every day. And I gave him his self-esteem in the form of a compliment or value paid, which some people think is something they want to qualify first. I gave him a $30 tip on the silver tray to match the bill. I thought he'd be happy about it because he struggled. And he said what I did for 40 years. He took a look at the value, took a look at me, took a look at himself, and said, it wasn't worth that much, sir. I said, I'll take 25 back then. Whew, lucked out again. Geez, safe. He said it was worth more than five. I said, if it wasn't to you, it wasn't to me. He said, do it to me one more time. I said, here's another 10. He went, thank you? I said, it hurts, doesn't it? He said, like a gold medal. I said, what does it do? He said, hunch your shoulders forward. I said, but when you say thank you, it pulls them back. Little R2-D2 from Star Wars says, huh, I didn't think you were worth it either, but if you take it, I'll take it. Another 10, he said, thank you. Another 5, and he said, thank you very much. And I said, you're welcome, by the way. Winners always lead with their best self coming in. And they say thank you and shut up. They always accept value paid. Period. They don't make qualifications. They don't make excuses coming in. They know that people listen in the first 3 minutes and make their decision on buying, selling, hiring, firing very quickly based on self-worth. That's the big ticket. That's the most important of all. It really is. Build the best you so you can give it away. Use language on yourself for the 1980s that's affirmative. A real estate salesman I saw recently was 27. She had a map under her arm. And she came out and said, I got this map in case we get lost. I'm new in the business and probably want somebody better. I haven't listed any homes yet, but I'll try to do the best I can under the circumstances. Another 127 came out with a map under her arm, and she said, "Hi, I got my map so we can go right to the source. I always take it with me. We don't get lost. I don't waste your time. Don't waste mine. I'm new in the business. Got lots of energy. I love the business, don't you? Having my best year ever. Let's go." You don't flaunt it. You just say it. You lead with your best suit. A little girl, 6 years old. I said, "Hi, aren't you beautiful?" She says, "Have no teeth in front." I said, "They'll grow back." And she said, "Probably crooked." I said, "You can get them straight." And she said, "Get cavities, though." All she needed to do was say thank you. I shoulda, coulda, woulda, mighta, oughta. If only Ida, if only Ida. I wish I was, but I'm not. I wish I could, but I can't. I have to go now. I have to work late. I have to do things. I have to pay taxes. No, you don't. I can't. Not you and I. You and I say, "I want to, I can, next time it'll be better, and thank you," period. The environment is a candy store from which we're suffering indigestion. The physical body is the most amazing of all creations on the earth, and the mind is, of all the things, an unlimited device, divinely created, that has not even begun to be tapped. Because of our fears, our laziness, and our lower expectations, we've been selling it short. Our awareness today blows the bottle and shatters it, and we open up a little more. We open up to the possibility that we ourselves as individuals, uniquely created, there'll never be another like us. There'll never be another like us. The telephone companies right now are creating a voice print system, and the voice print system has you speaking your voice to a microphone, which is the checkout stand at the supermarket. And as you speak to the microphone, the computer differentiates the frequency of your voice, unique to yourself, unlike any other, and it checks your credit down at the bank, and you immediately get a credit check without a credit card or anything else. So in the future, by the sound of our voice, we will be differentiated. You talk in different wavelengths. You think in different wavelengths. There'll never be another on the same frequency as you. No wonder we don't get along. We're not even on the same wavelength together. Footprint, fingerprint, toe print, voice print, all different. Identical twins grow up different. One stays in the ghetto. One walks out. Self-esteem is a feeling of inherent deserving of that abundance. And I didn't have much until I finally realized that it was all right to be in my 40s, a little overweight, without getting braces on my teeth when I was small, with a nose that grew too large. It's okay to be me. I comb my hair forward because I'm going bald. But on the other hand, it's not so bad to comb your hair like Mark Anthony. It's not so bad to weigh 200 when you should weigh 180. And so I finally accepted myself as imperfect and okay. My self-presentation now is, like we said, humble. I like to deal with people. There's nothing. A cabbie is as good as I. The elevator operator has the greatest job as I. People with less money and more money are no better, no worse. The color of their skin is no indication. The only thing that counts is whether, according to your own internal standards, you are doing something worth your time. Because all you've got to spend is time, and therefore you need to set your internal standards, and the way you get your cue, or the way you get your response, is by other people's respect. And I call that the double win. And the double win is, if I help you win, then I win. If you win, I win. We'll get on later on to what the real definition of a winner is in the end of the presentation by wrapping it up. But self-esteem for your children will be that marvelous ability as they grow to feel okay, to feel that the world is their oyster too, without flaunting it, without having to come crashing in with the finest clothes and the fastest car and the biggest ring and say, "Hey, hey, 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 look at me." That's because happiness cannot be bought, travel to, smoked. You can't drink it, you can't wear it, And you can't travel to it. You must experience it while you're going through. It is not a goal. It's an experience.
Winning in the 80s continues on tape number 3.